Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Yes, John Fardy in for Sean Moncrief today, and it's Movies and Booze, the greatest radio slot in Ireland. I might have said this the last time I was on. If we could just get, you know, the 1995 FA Cup final where Everton won, and maybe some Bruce Springsteen in the speakers, I may never want to leave this studio again. My children could come and visit from time to time, but I would be happy out, because we're going to talk about movies, we're going to talk about showbiz news, and we're going to drink some red and white wine. I am joined by Michelle Lawler, I'm joined by Deirdre Malumbi, and I'm joined by Russell Alford. You're all very welcome.
Good afternoon.
So, Michelle, what wines are we going to taste today?
So, I am very excited. Today we are going straight summery style wines because the weather is gorgeous. Yeah. We are going to try a grape variety from Italy that was nearly extinct in about 50 years ago called Falanghina. And we are going to try, I suppose, a very serious Beaujolais.
Oh, Beaujolais, but not serious
a
Beaujolais.
Very serious Beaujolais. All will be revealed.
Okay. Deirdre, the movies.
I'm excited too, actually.
Yeah, it's a good week. So I'll be talking about Thunderbolts, which is the latest from Marvel, the 36th movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if you can believe it. And the second film I'll be talking about is Another Simple Favour, which is the sequel to 2018's A Simple Favour, starring Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick.
Now, far be it for me to correct you when I'm just minding the chair, but should Thunderbolts not technically have an asterisk after it?
Oh, it does, yeah. Technically.
But I think they want us to say that.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I think so.
Asterisk.
Thunderbolt asterisk. I may be wrong. Let's get into that. Russell, what's going on in the world of show business that you're going to be telling us about?
It's a busy little week for showbiz. Katy Perry hasn't been too popular amongst many people for the last couple of weeks, but especially this week. Jerry Halliwell has been having what sounds like a very boring planning issue, but has a very fascinating turn. And what would you believe, Eurovision is embroiled in controversy and it hasn't even begun yet.
When does Eurovision begin?
2 weeks from now.
Are you a big Eurovision?
I am the biggest.
The biggest.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Yes. Michelle, we'll start with wine then, if that's okay. So are we going to go the serious Beaujolais or the less so serious?
The less so serious Falanghina. We're going to go for a white first. And okay, it's an Italian white wine. And most people, when they think of Italian white, immediately they go straight, this one is for you.
That one's for me.
You're looking a bit lost there. Don't worry.
I just wasn't sure.
Forget.
I was about to take two. Do I not get any? Oh, God. I don't want to do this anymore.
So most people, when they think of an Italian white, they go straight for Pinot Grigio. And Pinot Grigio is known for being light, simple, easy to drink. But there are so many grape varieties in Italy that offer loads of cool things like texture and fruit. And if you have a little taste of this one, for me, it is perfect. So the grape is Falanghina. Very similar, if you like, an Albarino, because it's dry, it's citrusy. They're perfect for food. And a little bit of that kind of apricot note. But you'll notice with this one, that as we're sitting here and I'm chatting away, the flavour will linger and develop on. And that's because this particular wine is from an area called Campania. So if you think of Italy like the knee, you're kind of just going below the knee. So halfway, okay, a little bit further than halfway down. And it's volcanic soils. So it's this amazing phenomenon. There are probably only 10 volcanic wine regions in the whole world, whereby the volcanic soils are so nutrient dense. Not nutrient dense, the exact opposite, that the vines have to go really deep. But what they do is they create wines with more weight. Can you feel that? It's weighty whilst not being heavy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's got this kind of textural intensity, lemon, honey, nutty flavours, perfect for food. And I would say with both of the wines I have here, unfortunately, I didn't bring the food. So,
hey.
Sorry, next time there'll be
I'm
meat
sure
and cheese.
I'm sure you would have for Sean.
Next time there'll be meat and cheese. But no, I tried before, he said no.
Really? Okay. Let's not get into that now. What would go well with
this
that?
Is, you know the phrase, when in Rome?
Yes.
And normally when you say when in Rome, it's about something else whilst not being in Rome, but you're just south of Rome here. So okay, it's actually when in Rome. You would have, because it's coastal, you're going to have some of those like shellfish, seafood, I would say poultry. I wouldn't go too strong in the flavour because when you taste it, it's not a particularly strong wine,
no,
but it's kind of layered, nuanced, peachy flavours. So I would be having it with chicken, maybe a little bit of pork, definitely shellfish, seafood. Like, you know, sometimes you say, what food would that go with? And then you say something that you'd never cook and you have absolutely no idea.
I always laugh. A lot.
And I'm like, God, should we not just say like spaghetti bolognese for everything? Yeah. But this would go really well if you're actually going to be at home making a seafood risotto. It'll be absolutely delicious with it.
High labour seafood risotto, though, isn't it? Pretty labour.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like one of those things. What would this go perfectly with? Yeah. Well, seafood risotto if someone else is cooking. The flavours are like garlic and parsley. That will work really well with this one.
Okay. Russell, did you like that?
I'm a big fan. I love volcanic soil wines, like so much. Like I've had a few from the Canary Islands in particular, and they're fantastic. They have a lot of characteristics that are very, very unique. There's a nice minerality to it. A little bit of a tingle as well. Sherbety kind of notes going on there as well.
Not that I'm a Philistine about wines, but I'm not a million miles off. Are you picking up that volcanic thing there?
I tend to be able to identify it because there's a rockiness, an earthiness in there.
You're
in the
exactly right. It's like this savouriness. And there's a thing about wine when someone says minerality and you're like, blah, blah, jargon. What does that actually mean? Yeah. And sometimes a way to describe it, and again, it's probably going to sound
that's
like
a
blah,
polite
blah.
Way of what I was hinting
yeah,
at.
Yeah, yeah, so blah, blah, jargon. But like licking it off a stone, or you know that kind of smell of wet stones that you get off of that. But generally they'll say with a volcanic wine is that you get like a savoury saltiness, which is what you kind of get with this. It's not like a fruit bomb that you expect with Sauvignon Blanc or Albarino. It's definitely in that savoury thing. And I would say it's a grower. Like as you sit there, you leave the flavour linger on. It's a really, really, for me, a really, really nice style of wine. And the volcanic regions, so Lanzarote, Tenerife, I have them written down because I have such a bad memory. Santorini and then actually Napa Valley. Randomly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they're very few. But they produce these really, like, I suppose, like hard and soft wines and that. They don't taste really full-bodied, but they've got loads of depth.
Yeah. And give us the name again, and I presume tell us where people can get their hands on.
Oh, yeah. So this wine, so the producer is called Vesuvo, and the grape is called Falanghina. And I worked with this guy in London years ago because this wine I've been selling on and off for 20 years in the various jobs I would have had over the years. And he was a Cockney guy and he used to call it Falangina. I know. Shocker. So when I say Falanghina, I'm like, did I say Falanghina or Falangina? Because it's just burned.
Falanghina.
Falanghina.
Repeat after me. Falanghina.
I know. And now I've ruined it for you. You'll be like, is it Falanghina or Falangina? But I'll put a picture up actually on my Instagram just so that you can see the print word of the grape. But you can get it nationwide in good independent off licenses.
Super. Well, it tastes good to me. Russell, tell us what's going on with Katy Perry then. She's back from space.
She is. She's back down to Earth after the very well-publicised Blue Origin flight a couple of weeks back. Now, there's been a lot of criticism, generally speaking, about the six women who went to space. Some people have said, I know Lorraine Kelly even said, it was like, they're not astronauts. They just went to the edge of space. It's not a real claim, which is fair. And if Lorraine Kelly says it, I have to take
They've gone gospel. Further than most of us would ever go.
You know, it's a bit further than a 737 would go, that's for sure. Gail King, who is many on this side of the Atlantic will know her as Oprah's best friend in America. She's the host of the CBS Morning Show. And by doing a daily show, she's probably the one who can respond quickest to a lot of things. She's been responding to some of the things about Katy Perry, but also the fact she's become a meme as well herself because of her expression of pure fear and panic as she was getting onto the rocket ringing the bell. But it's Katy Perry who's getting a lot of the hate in particular. So when you remember the videos of her floating around, she held up a butterfly which had a set list for her upcoming tour. Said tour has now begun. And the reviews are not the best right now. For example, there's criticism that she's using AI-generated imagery in the background for the stage art for a start, which of course is a very controversial topic in the graphic and design world at the moment. Her, I will say, flop song, because it was a bit of a flop woman's world, when she performs that, she's flanked by male dancers, which kind of makes not much sense. And she's been getting a lot of hate just generally over the last couple of years for one of the most successful female pop stars of the last 20 years. She's getting quite a bit of ire at the moment, and she's described herself as being a bit like a human piñata. So she responded to she reshared on Instagram a post. It was an image of a billboard in Times Square that her fans took out to support her, to say, we love you, we think you're amazing. And in the post, she said things like, getting hate online as being a human piñata because the internet has become a dumping ground for the unhinged and unhealed people. So she's at least responding to it. She's going on with the tour. It's doing well, but there's a lot of criticism in there.
A human piñata. You're getting a lot of shots if you're describing yourself as that.
The thing that I'm fascinated by, did you know you can pay for a billboard yourself in Times Square? It's $150.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
I was looking
at it. Totally
gonna
do it.
It's $150.
A bargain.
You get 15 seconds per hour for 24 hours. So it's not very long and you have to kind of time it very well.
This is a digital billboard, obviously. There's not some guy out with paste.
No. If you want to pay a sandwich board guy outside, I'm sure there's a different arrangement. But yeah, $150 if you're an ordinary citizen. If you're a business, $250, and you get 15 seconds in Times Square. And if you don't have to travel, you can watch it on a webcam. Maybe that's what Katie did.
Yeah, maybe. Loads of texts coming in about various things we're talking about. Deirdre, for you, and you're probably sympathetic to this, how can there be another Marvel movie? Has the universe not ended and been saved at least five times? I think it's a lot more than five times.
Yeah, well, I suppose, and I'll get into this more, I suppose, when I talk about my review, but the whole idea of the kind of the latest like Marvel movies post-Endgame, I suppose, is now that the Avengers are gone, who are the superheroes we turn to? And as of yet, they haven't figured it out. So that's why they keep making movies.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then for Michelle, I think Italian wine is better than French wine. Can you ask Michelle if that makes me a Philistine?
No.
Is that too broad a question?
Not at all. And I would always joke that I was Italian in a previous life because the wines are so delicious. I agree with this person. I'll go out with them tonight.
There you go. Give us your name and we'll see what we can do. Russell, tell us about celebrity traders. There's a lot of leaks.
Yeah, this has been obviously a lot of people are very excited about the Celebrity Traders show. There's been three very successful series on the BBC of the civilian pleb, whatever you want to call it, ordinary people series of it. But this has been much build that there's going to be a celebrity series filmed in the same castle, same format, going to air on BBC in the autumn. But ever since it's been announced, everyone has been speculating who will be going in.
Yeah.
And maybe the speculators are also the bookers, because this list seems to have just been very, very exact. Because some photos, the names, by the way, include people like Jonathan Ross, Tom Daly, the diver, Stacey Solomon, Kate Garraway, Stephen Fry, and many others. They have been rumoured since very early on, and then this week some photos were published by The Sun. Now, I'm not sure if The Sun took these photos or not, and there's a reason for it. Showing them on the castle, hanging out with Claudia Winkleman. So as such, confirming the rumours. Now, you don't get this with the pleb series because we may not recognise the people involved, but you do with celebrities. And in Scotland, they have a right to roam policy when it comes to the outdoors.
Yeah.
So you can try and close off your castle grounds as much as you like, but within reason you can walk through most forests and fields and the likes. And as a result, passers-by have been just seeing various bits and bobs going on. So despite trying to get every contestant to not fly into Inverness Airport, as would normally be, they've been, you know, helicoptered in, driven in, trains, and some have been flown in. Rather than all of that secret stuff, plus drones being banned over the castle, it's just been someone out for a nice walk with their dog taking photos of them while they're doing a challenge.
So we don't have any likely riders then, it sounds.
No. Like Richard Osman, who hosts the brilliant, if you've never listened to it, the Rest is Entertainment podcast, it's fantastic. Yeah. He has been speculating. He knows everyone in television, and he's pointed out that he's like, there's still a few people who have not necessarily been announced yet. Now, has this been filmed, this particular podcast episode been recorded before these pictures were released or after? It remains to be seen. But I think it's a bit of a shame to see this series potentially being spoiled so early on.
Yeah. And I think when it comes, and the rest of my distinguished panel can weigh in, but when it comes to Traitors, like, and reality TV, Traitors has good standing. I mean, most people agree it's a great piece of TV. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a cachet, like I could see, it's not Z-listers going in, no disrespect to people who've gone into Celebrity Big Brother, but I could see Jonathan Ross or someone like that.
Absolutely. And it's an easy commitment too. It's like under 2 weeks. It's in Scotland, so it's in the UK for a lot of them to be able to travel to easily. Mm-hmm. You don't have to eat any bugs or testicles.
Yes.
And you don't have to live in a house, actually, in isolate. You stay in a travel lodge or something like that down in Inverness Airport. So it's not this constant 24-hour thing.
You have your own space.
It's appealing.
Yeah. When does that start?
I believe it's going to be the autumn.
Okay. I rarely say this about reality TV because I'm a TV snob, but I am looking forward to that. And of course, The Traitors coming to Ireland. Hi, John. In a previous life and career, I used to sell a rich, dark, sumptuous and gusty red from the slopes of Mount Etna. Unforgettably good. There you go, Etna Rosa. That's from Austin.
Yeah, so that's also a volcanic region. And it's interesting that he said it was full-bodied and voluptuous, because normally the reds that you're going to get on Mount Etna, again, because they're volcanic, they're dense in flavour but light in colour, in tannin. So it might have looked more like a Pinot Noir or a Beaujolais rather than like a Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm. And the grape is generally Nerello Mascalese. But again, that guy if he wants to go out later. Loving wow. the Italian.
Let's get a crew together.
I'm not going home.
Big time. Do you want to hear my really boring Mount Etna story?
Yeah.
I was there and it was snowing. So it was very un-Etna-esque, if you know what I mean. Fascinating, isn't it? If you want to stay tuned for more fascinating insights, we will be back after the break when Deirdre is going to talk to us about Thunderbolts. We'll start with that.
The sense today.
Congressman Barnes, wow. You know, I never really thought you'd have a promising political career, but less than half a term. Yikes.
We're taking you in, Val.
I don't think so. Junior varsity, Captain America.
Walker.
How nice to see you, Ava. Elena, you look awful. Mm-hmm. You sure you're really ready for that public-facing role you asked me about?
Eat shit, Valentina. Where's Bob?
Look at you. You are all so adorable. Just think, I send you down there to kill each other, and instead, you make nice and you form a team. Who is this old Santa?
I'm Alexei Shostakov. The Red Guardian.
What?
Possibly dodgy accents. That was a clip from Thunderbolts. I'm insisting we put the asterisks in. Deirdre Malumbi is not convinced. Are you convinced about the movie?
Am I convinced about the accents? I'm married to a Russian, so whenever I hear the fake Russian accents, I'm like, I cringe.
That was fake, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's David Harbour, so yeah, it's hardly authentic. To be honest, like as we were kind of talking about before the outbreak there, like Marvel hasn't had a great run of movies since Endgame. They've been a bit lost. They don't know what the heck they're doing. I have to say, though, having seen this film, it's one of the better Marvel movies. I do think that at this point, the bar is quite low. Anyway, like I'd probably say that, you know, if I were to give it a star rating, I'd probably give it about 3 stars. But yeah, I did actually find it like okay and fairly entertaining.
So tell us what's going on.
So we've got a team of ragtag superheroes, or rather anti-heroes, who are teaming up initially just to save their own skin, but later to save the world. And I suppose all the action is kicked off because of Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who you would have heard in the clip there. She plays Valentina, who basically is desperate to cover up her tracks when she comes under investigation for impeachment. And part of that investigation involves the fact that she has this kind of cohort of, you know, people doing like, you know, maybe evil, kind of sinister, like little deeds for her. So she has to cover all of this up. So you've got a like whole string of characters in here. And I will say this in fairness, like if you haven't seen any of the Marvel stuff so far, because I mean, you're pulling characters in here from like across the movies,
it's
across
so
the
confused.
TV series. Yeah. Going back way, way, way. But in fairness, like they've so much exposition dialogue. And because this is kind of an origin story, as in it's the origin of the so-called Thunderbolts, like it works, you kind of are dropped in and you kind of know enough that's going on, you know, they establish
so
it well.
So are the Thunderbolts the new Avengers, or can you not say? Or
I guess I can't really say, but the whole idea about them is, that makes them, I suppose, there are two elements of them that are quite interesting. First of all, they're not really superheroes per se. So you've got a few in there who are like super soldiers. So you know how like Captain America went through this process where he was injected with this, you know, serum, so he became a super soldier and stuff like that. But he doesn't have any kind of, you know, magical powers per se, like the likes of Thor and everything. So these guys would be the same. They're all essentially like, you know, mortal non-superheroes. Yeah. And the other thing that's quite interesting about them, I suppose, is they all have these kind of dodgy pasts where they've like really, you know, killed people and done some like quite, you know, morally questionable things. So in a way, it's funny as well because they're marketing this as the A24 of Marvel movies, which it isn't at all. It's basically Marvel's answer to Suicide Squad. That's kind of the idea of it.
Okay.
You know?
If you had to give it a star rating.
Yeah, I would give it 3 stars. Okay. Like what I liked about it, in fairness, was it's got a great cast. You've got Florence Pugh in there, Sebastian Stan, David Harbour, Wyatt Russell, Lewis Pullman, the sons, by the way, respectively, of Kurt Russell and Bill Pullman, which is quite interesting. I like the cast. I thought that there were some good action sequences, in fairness, and there are kind of some interesting themes as well. Some work better than others because they're kind of, I suppose, looking at politics, media, publicity and marketing when it comes to the whole kind of superhero game. They do try to tie in this like storyline of like mental health and sinking into the void kind of in the third act. I didn't know if that quite worked, but in fairness, because of like I said, the fact that they're not like superheroes per se. I appreciated the fact that it was like more focused on kind of the like practical effects and the fights and the chase sequences as opposed to the CGI and the explosions and stuff like that. So I find it kind of refreshing that way.
Interesting, because I know something about this because I do present News Talk's only film and TV show called Screen Time. But that the director had this idea that he, in some way he was aping The Breakfast Club. Okay. In terms of when they got together. Could you see that when all the Thunderbolts guys are together?
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. I mean, definitely I would buy into The Breakfast Club thing more so than the A24 thing. I don't know who said that, to be honest. I think that's just like clutching at straws. But because I suppose they're all kind of mismatched, although some of them do have connections. Like, for example, Yelena, who's played by Florence Pugh, her father actually is Alexei, a.k.a. the Red Guardian, who is played by David Harbour. So they kind of have, some of them have these like arbitrary connections. And the fact that you have Wyatt Russell's character, John Walker, he was like going to be the new Captain America, but that fell through. And then the Red Guardian is basically kind of the whole idea with him was that he was Russia's answer to Captain America. So it's interesting seeing these characters kind of come together. And what works so well is the fact that these are all very good actors. The only one I probably felt a bit sorry for was Hannah John Kamen as Ghost, because she doesn't really get to do an awful lot. I suppose that's often an
issue when it comes to these movies.
She's amazing. Yeah, and she leads this film flawless as ever. Although I did find her eyeliner a bit distracting because it was so inconsistent, it was driving me crazy. But what can you do?
That notwithstanding, 3 stars for Thunderbolts, if you want to give it the asterisks as well. Russell and Michelle, superhero movies, they leave you cold, they leave you warm. Where do they leave you?
They leave me in a place that I'm like, I would like to get more into them because I think I'd enjoy them, but I just find myself going over them on the streaming thing. Okay. So this does pique my interest. You said Breakfast Club. I love Breakfast Club kind of vibe. And if I can see that kind of characterization and I'm there.
I would say if you were going to give them another shot, this would be the one.
Yeah. Well, that's a good endorsement. Yeah. Michelle?
I'm just mad for crime thrillers. And so those type of films, I'm like, well, gloss over it.
Good. Well, I'm glad I asked. Tell me about this serious Beaujolais.
Okay,
then.
Okay, so way back when, I'm not going to ask your age, John, but there was a point in the 80s and 90s where Beaujolais was really en vogue, where it was all about that kind of quaffing style. Beaujolais Nouveau was absolutely huge. And then it kind of fell out of fashion.
You used to hear Del Boy talking about it.
Oh, well, there you go. And it just kind of fell off the radar a little bit, and a lot because I feel like Malbec has a lot to answer for because it's so commercial and easy to say and consistent, I think, a lot of times.
Easy to say?
Malbec. Yeah. Much easier than Falangina.
Yeah. No argument there.
And so actually, Beaujolais is now coming into this kind of resurgence of coolness. And it's also probably the centre in the whole of France of the natural wine movement. And if you're looking for the best weekend getaway, go to Lyon. Just north of Lyon, you've got Beaujolais, you've got Burgundy, you've got Macon. Just south, you've got Chateauneuf-du-Pape, Hermitage. So this particular one, this is a cru Beaujolais. So there are, you know, how do I get a really good Beaujolais? Because Beaujolais is a region. It's a bit like saying Dublin's a region. Okay. And then within that, there are 10 crus that are really good. And that's like saying, so this is Morgan. That's like saying it's Ballsbridge. Another famous one like Fleury. That's like saying Malahide.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a specific high quality. I've just identified 2 regions that are high quality. I won't go any further without the fear of offending quite a lot of people. So what we've gone for here is a Morgan. So it's a named region within the bigger region. And you only give something a name like that if it's particularly good quality. Mm-hmm. Fleury is probably the most famous. Bruy, Moulin Avant are a couple of other ones. But this goes one step further. And it's called Côte du Puy. And it's considered the most serious of all of Beaujolais, to the point where it's more like a Pinot Noir. And you can see it's dry, it's minerally, it's got that licking a stone thing on it again. But it's named Côte du Puy, which is a slope. So it's not like saying Ballsbridge, it's like saying Anglesey Road. It's a very specific part of a very specific
region. Note of all the areas she mentioned. Not to mention a Stony Batter once.
I'm so sorry to everybody I've offended. So anyway, look, this is a really gorgeous wine. It's a really good food wine. And I would say Beaujolais, you can split it literally into two, like the general Beaujolais and the Beaujolais Nouveau, which is the southern half of Beaujolais. And I'd call that drinking wine. And then this is northern Beaujolais region where all the crus are. And I'd call that thinking wine. And you can see when you have a taste of it, it's not something you quaff. You'll have a sip and you'll think about it and then you'll have another sip and you might think about it again.
Yeah.
It's 2022 vintage, this particular one. Really
really, for me, really high quality, really good value for money. And it really delivers on someone who likes either a Pinot Noir or who likes maybe a Nebbiolo or a Barolo, or what I was saying earlier, the Nerello Mascalese, who likes that kind of loads of flavour but light and tannin. And you can see with this one, if you hover that over, if anyone's got notes written in front of them, you can nearly read at a 45 degree angle the notes. That's how light the tannins are. So this one, given this gorgeous warm weather we're going to have for the next 7 days, pop that in the fridge. And I would say that for all Beaujolais, Fleuries, Morgans, pop it in the fridge for half an hour before you drink it, because room temperature today, I'm sure in anyone's house, is 22-24 degrees. Bring it down to 16-17 degrees, just 30 minutes in the fridge. What you'll get is like this pop of intense freshness. Anyway, I love
it. It's interesting. You say you taste it and you kind of pause for thought. I can see that.
Yeah.
Russell?
I'm very into that. The second I had a sip of that, I said to myself, oh, I'd love that. I'm a bit chilled now.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of a chilled red. I do like when they're like that. And that is a really nice one. It's you kind of look at it, as you said, Pinot Noir style, and expect it to be a little bit heavier, but it's very light, nice and dry. I can imagine that beautiful with like a barbecue.
It's very nice.
Loads of savoury notes with that. Again, when you think about a standard Beaujolais or a Beaujolais Nouveau, and I'm just referring to them because that's what most people might have as a frame of reference, is that really vibrant, like nearly like cranberry, Ribena flavour, whereas this one is exactly not that. So if you're thinking, okay, I want that, don't get this wine. But if you like that kind of more savoury, herbaceous, minerally, and I find, and it's a bit like the volcanic wines, there's life in it. You know, you can feel there's like a zip.
I feel like I'm in a sideways movie. I'm enjoying this. Listen, there's a couple of texts here. I never thought of Italy as a thigh-high boot, but you're right. It's not a knee-length boot, as I was thinking when the knee of the boot was mentioned. That savoury white wine sounds lovely, and Beaujolais, the Novo, gives it a bad name. You can't beat a good Beaujolais. So there you go, Michelle. This is an interesting one, Deirdre. I've never seen a single Marvel movie. If I watch one, that wouldn't be really confusing. Like, as a standalone one, this person is asking, what would Deirdre recommend? So I know nothing about Marvel. I have a vague idea of Spider-Man or something like that. Is there one?
Oh, that's so hard.
Tough, isn't it?
That's really hard because I suppose when, like, I was really into the Marvel movies, like when they were kind of at their peak and stuff. Like, I watched the whole build up to Infinity War and Endgame and stuff like that. Like, my favorite Marvel movie overall probably would be Infinity War, but you need the build up of the movies
to
watch that.
You can't just drop in on that one.
Yeah, but I remember like coming out of the cinema when I watched that movie, like genuinely shook.
Yeah. You know? Well, I thought Endgame was like, I was crying at the end of when all that had come to an end.
I thought Endgame was good in that they landed such a rocky plane. And in fairness, like for all the criticisms that people had over Endgame, I think now in retrospect, given what Marvel have produced since, there's a lot more appreciation for Endgame now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Marvel movies are great for a lazy, hungover Sunday on the couch. Mindless nonsense, but serves a purpose. Not everything has to be The Godfather.
Yep.
Let people enjoy things. Fair enough. Nothing wrong with The Godfather. I would hate this show to be associated with not endorsing The Godfather. Can you just, Michelle, give us the name of that wine again?
Yeah. So the producer here is Trenel. That's quite specific. There are only a couple of shops that would have it, including our own. But the wine itself, so given that we're just talking about regions and streets or slopes, etc., Morgon, Morgon, is the Appellation.
Okay.
Similar to Beaujolais being an appellation.
Yes.
Or Moulin-Avant being an appellation. And then the street or the slope, Côte de Puy, and Puy is just spelled P-Y. So I probably said it wrong.
Okay. And they can find it where?
So again, you'll be able to find this in, I would say, good independent wine shops nationwide. Probably not something more general. I'd say you'd have to go to a good independent wine shop.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Movies and Booze here on Friday afternoon. John Fardy in for Sean. After the break, more movies, a little more booze. And also we find out about Jerry Halliwell's planning issues. Russell, tell me this, Jerry Halliwell, planning issues, but they're more interesting than that sounds.
Yeah.
Or are they?
They are. I hate to sound like a neighbourhood watch kind of WhatsApp group here, but there's a bit of an interesting story. So Jerry Halliwell, Horner, depending on how you say it, she has been annoying her neighbours, and it seems like this is a habit. And, you know, if you've seen interviews with Jerry Halliwell, you probably go, she's probably been annoying. Great crack, I bet, though. She has plans to build a 77-foot horse walker at her sprawling country estate. Herself and her husband, Christian Horner, the F1 boss. They want to exercise 8 horses at their Grade 2 listed mansion in Oxfordshire. But the locals and neighbours are not too happy with it. And they're really angry that they're constantly doing home improvements in the area. And you'd think that this is a bit of just a run-of-the-mill story, but you have to go into the detail of it. She has several horses. And what are the names? They're named after all of her hits, which is possibly the most Jerry Halliwell thing ever.
I love it.
So if you're watching Punchestown, Cheltenham, or any of those great horse racing events, if you see a Machico Latino, You Lift Me Up, Bag It Up, Look At Me, It's Raining Men, Ride It, or my personal favourite, Half of Me, it's possibly a Jerry Halliwell owned horse. So there you go.
No Spice Girls name songs.
No Spice Girls names there, but there is rumours that there is a tour of the girls, not the horses, the girls. There's rumours of a tour happening in the next year because it is going to be the 30th anniversary of their coming onto the scene. And again, it looks like Victoria Beckham will probably not really bother doing it this time around, which is a bit of a shame.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Well, let's see what happens. And those are horses that will ride in races, presumably.
Possibly. Yeah. Like
Trap 4 Doncaster.
Maybe
that's greyhounds. I don't know.
I'm not entirely sure, but I'm more onto the Jerry Halliwell end of the story than the horse bit.
Yeah.
But
clearly I am too. Yeah. So yeah, okay. Let's move on. But that's Jerry Halliwell with our horses. So we have another movie we're going to talk about, Another Simple Favour.
Emily, why are you here? You came for vengeance in a suburban bookstore?
Stephanie, please. You're my best friend. You saved me. You gave me a clean slate. That's why I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to find ways to thank you.
That's the most terrifying thing she said yet.
It's true. Thanks to you, I'm getting married.
How did that happen?
Oh, you know, the good old-fashioned way.
Bathroom sex?
No one knows me like you do. Which is why I came to ask you something. Stephanie Smothers, will you...
Will you be my maid of honor?
That's available now to stream on Amazon from today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is a sequel.
Yes.
And the sequel was called Simple Favour.
A Simple Favour, yeah. And this is Another Simple Favour, although I keep on...
Great title.
I keep accidentally calling it A Simpler Favour, but that's not the title. No, it's good it's called Another Simple Favour, because as it turns out, it's not just one simple favour, because they keep on dropping. And I need to ask a simple favour. And I was just like, oh, by the end of it. You know, like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme.
Yeah.
That's what it was becoming by the end of it.
Yeah. So what happened in the first movie?
Okay, so I don't want to kind of spoil anything. A Simple Favour is actually streaming.
I thought you were going to say I don't know.
Okay. No. I've seen it. It's a great movie. But A Simple Favour is streaming now on Netflix. So if you happen to be subscribed to both, I would watch both. So all you really
need to... But this is on Prime. Sorry,
But this is on Prime Video. Yeah, so all you really need to know is that at the end of A Simple Favour, Emily, played by Blake Lively, went to jail. That's all you really need to know. But basically, she has now gotten out on appeal and she has... she has a new favour to ask of Emily, which is she's getting remarried and she would like for Stephanie to be her bridesmaid.
Okay.
Oh, it's very cute.
The first one was quite successful. I think I remember enjoying it. Yeah. Is this one successful?
It's, you know what? It is suffering a little bit from sequelitis, as I like to call it. So I suppose what they've done now is they've moved the act. There is kind of a new, mystery to it. That was the whole idea of the first film. It was kind of comedy slash mystery thriller type of vibe. But as you get with a lot of sequels, basically what they've done is they've put the action in like a kind of jet setting, you know, glamorous backdrop. So Blake Lively's character is getting married in the very glamorous Capri, which means we have these absolutely, you know, gorgeous getaway backdrops and everything like that.
Should we bring in our Italian correspondent here now?
Yes. Actually,
buongiorno.
White wine would actually pair very well with this movie, I think. Although the girls, their drink of choice is always a dirty martini. Although in the first movie, oh my gosh, it was cringe, the aviation gin advertisements in that. But luckily they've gotten rid of them for this movie. They must have known that there was a bit of criticism there. Where the film is really at its strongest is when you have Kendrick and Lively bouncing off of each other. Their relationship, you always have questioning. Sometimes they're sharp and catty with each other, exchanging insults. And then other
times they're drunk, they're giddy, they're affectionate with one another. So you never know, are they really, you know, friends or are they enemies? They're kind of frenemies, I suppose. Okay. And in fairness, Henry Golding, who's in the first film, he comes back here, and I'm not always mad about him as an actor, but in fairness, when he shows up, he's like the embittered, like now very drunken ex, and it is one of his stronger, funnier performances. I would say compared to the first, A Simple Favor, you've got more murder in this, you've got more twists, but unfortunately, I felt that in the second half, it was kind of losing the run of itself. It's a bit long. It's not quite as kind of zippily paced as the first movie is. I think it also shows its hand too early in that it reveals kind of the, you know, answer behind the mystery a bit too early.
Okay.
It also gets a bit silly. But at that, you know, if you like the first one, I suppose it's worth checking out. Blake Lively's fashion as well, if that's something that you're into. Because there are a lot of these like movies and shows that are now made purely for the fashion. Like you look at something like And Just Like That and people really watch it just for the outfits. And Blake Lively sports in this movie the most fantastic hat I have ever seen. It was so enormous. I was like, I just appreciated the dedication. And I was watching this movie last night with my husband, and he was taken aback by the hat. And I mean, he would have no fashion sense whatsoever. So
I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, and I've said that a few times, but is it your set? Because I was a massive Sex and the City fan, but I think they've destroyed it with Just Like That and Just Like That. Do you think that was really primarily just a vehicle for clothes? Is that what you're saying?
No, not really.
Okay.
But I mean,
sorry,
I think
I was hoping to hop on that
band. In fairness, I love Sex and the City. Like I've rewatched it like a good few times at this point, and I've even made my husband rewatch it with me. It's been great. But a huge like a part of the appeal of Sex and the City has been the clothes. Like the people can kind of like watch it now as almost a kind of time capsule. And in fairness, there are certain elements of that show that have dated and others that have not. The weird thing about watching And Just Like That is the fashion isn't as impressive, and B, it feels so much more dated, even though it's more contemporary. It's so, so strange that way. But Sex and the City is definitely the more rewatchable city. Whereas And Just Like That, I have watched every episode, admittedly, probably going to watch season three, but I'm not going to rewatch that show anytime soon. It's a guilty pleasure, but I know it's a bad show. Okay, I know it is.
I'm not saying Sex and the City was a bad show.
No, it's one of the greatest TV shows. Bad.
Yes. Okay. Great. Now, anyway, sorry. Back to Another Simple Favor. So, Amazon Prime, it can be streamed from this Friday. A Nice Night In.
Yeah. It's something a bit kind of simple. You know?
Stars.
Oh, stars. 2.5. I'd say it's kind of down the line. It's okay. I was watching it mostly for the fashion, but I probably wouldn't rewatch this. Like I've seen A Simple Favor like 2 or 3 times at this point. But look, if you like the first one, it's worth checking out. If you didn't or you haven't seen, it's probably not worth your time.
Okay, fair enough. Michelle, you're Sex and the City and Just Like That fan?
Sex and the City fan, huge. And Just Like That, watched one. I saw that the trailer for the third one or the promos, and I was like, oh, something can't to avoid.
Okay. Russell?
I'm kind of like the opposite. I'm like, I love Sex and the City, but I seen the promo and I'm very excited for
Are
it.
Are you?
Just because it's that catch up with the girls.
That's what I love.
And I want to see what happens. I think we've put to bed the Samantha Jones thing. She did one appearance in the back of a taxi.
Yeah.
Grand, she appeared. That's great.
The dress that Cynthia Nixon is wearing in that third season, the still that's gone around, I'm like, oh my God, I need that dress. It's so funny that you say that because I'm like, I wonder where that dress.
That must be the most underwhelming return of a character.
Oh, 1,000,000%. But also, there's plenty of people just screaming and gagging over it because it was like, oh my God, Samantha Jones is on screen. It's amazing.
Talking of underwhelming, Beyoncé's tour, going gangbusters.
Not going too well at all at the moment. So the Cowboy Carter tour kicked off in the States. Again, another tour that's not coming to Ireland, but is going to other parts of Europe. And I guess the way to call it is the crowd went mild.
How long did that take?
I had it written down to make sure I said it. There was basically huge gaps in the crowd. So the ticket sellers were trying to almost gaslight the public, saying there's no gaps, there's no tickets for sale. And people were going, but why can I buy tickets at a knockdown price 24 hours before the gigs? And there's been various different theories and reasons that potentially could cause this. One of the most prominent ones is that there's the association between Beyonce and Diddy and the stuff that's going on there at the moment. There's also the fact that the Cowboy Carter album isn't as popular amongst core fans in the same way a lot of the classics are. And when you look at the set list, it is mostly Cowboy Carter, most recent hits as well.
And of course, in this day and age, people check set lists and she's not going to change it up much night to night. So
absolutely,
they know what's coming. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think there's a bit of an attitude of that as well. And also the last tour was only 18 months ago as well, especially in Europe. So I think a lot of people may be feeling a bit of fatigue. We had obviously Taylor Swift and others coming along. It's a lot for people to deal with. London is the closest venue that we have for this particular tour. And there's been talk of people getting complimentary upgrades from the cheap seats to the not so cheap seats, because they essentially just want to close off the higher echelons, move people down to make it look a little bit fuller. There's still tickets available for all the shows. And with a name like Beyonce, you kind of expect sellouts.
Strange, isn't it?
Very odd.
Then just quickly, I misread that and I thought it said Bored Be a documentary. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. But it's actually a Band-Aid documentary, which I'm very fascinated by. No disrespect to Bored Be a, but I'd be more interested in
I'll
a Band-Aid
host it
documentary.
Gladly. But anyway, the Band-Aid one I won't. But this, if you're into music documentaries, this sounds like a really fascinating one. Brooke Lapping, who have made things like that you may have seen on the BBC and the likes of Inside Obama's White House, Surviving Katrina, and Jackie Magazine, Girl's Best Friend, very wide ranging topics there. They're going to create a documentary in collaboration with CNN of Live Aid at 40, and there's going to be 6.5 hours of they have access to 6.5 hours of extra footage from the concerts and everything, lots of interviews with lots of the artists themselves as well as politicians. And it's not just Live Aid, it's also Live 8, which happened back
20
in,
years was, later yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. It was 20 years ago today. Bono came on singing it, that's
yes,
right,
exactly. So
the producer just thought, oh god, he's about to sing, but I didn't. So
no,
you're okay.
No,
I'll go on.
No. So it sounds like a really interesting documentary, given the behind the scenes of probably one of the most iconic gigs of all time. Of course, everyone will always talk about Concord across,
Phil
Collins going across on Concord to perform two gigs in one day, which is still a feat that Beyonce, Katy Perry, and others and Jerry Horner probably couldn't achieve themselves just yet.
When are we going to see that?
There's no timeline just yet. Later this year, I believe, is the slate of time. Yeah.
Okay, we look forward to that. Well, that has been today's Moncrief and indeed Movies and Booze. My thanks to Michelle Lawler, Deirdre Malumbi, and of course, Russell Alfred there.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.